Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe with your host, Robin Misevich. Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about health, wellness, happiness, personal growth, spirituality, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. I'm your host, Robin Misevich, and I'm excited. We've got our first cafe book club that we're doing this week. We're starting right off here in January. We're going to be doing Faith for the Unbeliever, and the author is Daniel Cantor, and he is actually going to be on the show tonight. We're so excited to be joining him. And I'm calling the show Embracing Faith in Uncertain Times. And, boy, we certainly are being, change and challenge is something that's really coming up for all of us. And I'm excited to talk about all the different things that we could be looking at as we go through this book. And I'll go ahead and get my co-host, Miss Amy. How are you tonight?
I'm really excited. Alana is going to, we'll have her come on here in a little bit and talk about her experience. But she had talked about this wonderful experience that she had at her church, and she gifted me with this book, and I ate it up. And I know that she gifted it to you too, and I'm very excited about us, you know, sharing this and sharing this with our listeners and getting them started on working on it.
Well, I ate it up too, so it's delicious. So that's
great. I know it's yummy at the cafe.
Mm-hmm. It is yummy. Well, it's kind of a full meal. It feels like a full meal because you've just got all these different kinds of aspects of stuff to be enjoying. So that's good. So, Lane, I would love for you to go ahead and introduce Daniel.
Well, thank you. I am a member, a congregant at the church that Reverend Cantor is CEO and minister, lead minister of. And I think I joined probably 5 years ago now. And it's been a wonderful experience. I came to the church from we left the Mormon church, and the UU church was something I'd been to in my childhood, and we returned to it, and it's been a wonderful support to me as we went through our faith transition as a family. And I love the principles that are taught in the UU faith, and I especially appreciate the all three ministers that we have there. And but Reverend Cantor is a wonderful person. I'm so thankful. Thank you for joining us tonight, Reverend Cantor.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
And just wanted to, Reverend Cantor has just been a grounding voice through the last 4 years for me. And he wrote this book in 2017, and it has just been, in the back of my mind, always like, I just really want to have a wonderful discussion with him about this book. And I'm so glad he's indulged that and come to the show tonight. And is bringing it, we're bringing it out to our audience, and hopefully that it will help somebody identify, where they lie on the faith spectrum, and get some hopefully some healing or some perspective from it. So again, thank you for coming.
So glad to be with you guys, and I hope the meal is good tonight here at the cafe.
Well, we're sure of it. We always make sure. Exactly.
You did promise dessert too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I was just gonna say,
but you
got to
finish your meal.
No, you don't. I don't. She's that side. I'm just like, eat dessert first. It's in a life.
And
that is
the difference between us. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
She's the older sister. You can tell. It's all good. Well, Daniel, right off the bat, I really want to talk about the foreword of the book is wonderful with your – and how did you choose him to have be the person to write your foreword?
Yeah, Reuben Hobito was my advisor in my doctoral program at SMU Perkins School of Theology. He's he's a Catholic, he's a Buddhist, and a fantastic guy. And he encouraged me to – write this book, and so he was natural to be in the foreword.
Okay, so we can blame him for all this. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, and I just love the whole, I would have to say I'm a Baptist Buddhist, so I really, yeah. I'm really excited about, where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, Reuben really sort of, Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Whatever you want to say.
No, I was just going to say he does sort of embody where the whole book is coming from, which is that, you know, one faith in a sense is not sufficient to sort of satisfy spiritual hunger. In other words, even if we are part of a faith tradition, we should be asking good questions of it. We should be finding different ways to really explore what it really means to be a person of faith or be a spiritual person. And Reuben mm-hmm. gets that because he really has come through many different perspectives and now is really one of the finest theologians and teachers at Perkins here in Dallas.
Wow.
Reverend Baker, I don't know if you know this, but I went to SMU for 2 years, my undergrad, and was right across the street from the Perkins Chapel in the freshman dorms there.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Uh-oh, so hopefully it's probably a good thing he doesn't know because you might have been in trouble.
I was nothing but good.
I'm sure you were.
He's just trying to stay off the radar, that's all. It's all good.
All right.
So that's right why she chapel, found the church. That's why she found the chapel.
Yeah, there it is.
Well, college I love how Reuben really started by introducing this idea that you really carry through the whole book about, you know, this fourfold set of lenses that enable us to see a deeper down things. And you bring that into basically a window panes. And I love the idea of that. Both of them, to me, I think are really good metaphors for just the different ways that we're going to be looking at all the different aspects. And, you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, how did you come to write this book? So we can blame Reuben a little bit on that. But, I mean, he can nudge you all he wants, but that doesn't mean you're going to do it.
Yeah. Right. No, I mean, it was part of some of my doctoral work to sort of reclaim this idea that we can be people of faith without having to be labeled as believers. So I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and in the traditional Christian sense, I would be considered a non-believer. I don't have a faith that says Jesus was God on earth. I have a faith that says Jesus was a man who had a lot of great things to teach and worthy of our attention. So in the traditional sense, I would be considered a non-believer. But the disconnect for me is that I was deeply a person of faith. So my question to myself and to my Unitarian Universalism was, how then do we compose being a person of faith without this traditional label? So thus, faith for the unbeliever. And really, the work started by studying a theologian from Emory University named Wilford Cantwell Smith, who challenged this idea that assent or belief was the only way to faith, which is traditionally what it would be. If we stopped 10 people on the street tomorrow and asked them, what does it mean to have faith? They would say, you have to believe X, Y, and Z. But Cantwell Smith said, really, the original intention of assent, which was the word for belief traditionally in Christianity, was to set your heart upon God or set your heart upon something, which is different than setting your mind on a concept. So if you set your heart on something important, that in and of itself is faith. And so I started there and I started to explore, okay, so then we have all these other ways in which we think about faith. Am I faithful to the people I love? Am I faithful in my life to different ideas that I hold, these kinds of things. And I started to compose this, what you identify as this four-pane window, which was faith itself could be made up of what you believe, what you trust, what you're loyal to, and what your worldview is. And the whole thing together, when we look through a window, if it's separated by wooden panes, we wouldn't just look through one, we would look through the whole thing. So in my work at SMU, I started to really come to this idea and then think about it in a way to both free people from this dichotomy, this believer-unbeliever dichotomy, but also to encourage people to examine whatever they had, whatever they had set their heart upon. Each of you probably could tell me, what do you set your heart upon? We're talking about deepest callings. Then we could ask the question, how is that composed of these various aspects? And that's what the book is really about.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, each of the themes that are going to be covering on that, there's going to be some questions on the end of that. And I think that's really wonderful. Plus, Daniel was very generous in offering the workbook that goes with it, too. So we're going to have that as something that we can have as a part of our kind of digging in and looking at everything. So anything coming up for you, Wayne?
Yeah.
Thank you so much. That was really beautifully put. And I think a lot of people do struggle with this whole faith thing and believing thing. And I love how you're so, I would say, user-friendly. And I feel like I already know you through reading the book. So it seems really kind of odd, right, talking to you. I feel like I already know you, which is wonderful.
That's a good thing.
And so part of what came to me from my own work, I love business, but I really hate the it's just business, right? When people just can justify things that they do. And in the foreword, Ruben talks about you being somebody that responds to the calling and the urgings of the deepest places of your spirit. And so when you're going through your, and it's a big question, but you know, get the Cliff Note answer, going through your day, how do you hear and respond to that, in however way you want to come at that question?
Yeah, see, I mean, one of the things that's really important to me is that idea that that we are all really called to be and do things in the world, that we're not just here to sort of walk around and do stuff because we got to eat. We have to do that, but we also have deeper urges. We have these movements of the heart, and that's where we have to follow that, where you set your heart upon. And at the end of the book, I do tell about my call story, this experience I had on a mountain in the Himalayas, which is it's like the comic book version of a biblical story of a guy, a 20-year-old kid from America, sitting on a rock in the Himalayas and meditating and trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life. And all of a sudden, the words, return home and serve your people, were in my ear. I heard these words. It was a reset. And that sort of calling, that deeper listening to what life is something I never lose. So I ask myself frequently, how am I returning home and serving my people, returning home to myself, to real people? And then where is service? Where am I giving myself to the common good, to values that I care about, to freedom and compassion and love? And I think that's a important thing for us to live by. It doesn't have to be my values and my calling. It has to be, each of us has to find those own urgings and calling. And that's spiritual life. I mean, that's what we're here to do beyond making enough money to put dinner on the table. In our spare time, we shouldn't just be, you know, I think we shouldn't just be spending time entertaining ourselves, which is well and good, and I do plenty of it, my Netflix, my Hulu, whatever. But I also spend time trying to answer these deeper callings or listen to these deeper urgings of the heart. And that set me up when I was 20 years old and heard this calling, and ever since I've had to ask this question. How am I returning home? How am I serving my people? And each of us, we don't have to be sitting on a mountain to get this kind of awareness. We could be washing the dishes and just have a moment of clarity, or we could be watching our children play in a playground and just have this, like, this deep experience. And I think we all do have those if we pay attention.
That's beautiful, and that's what we talk a lot about. That is creating those moments of stillness, and I love that. Is whether washing the dishes or, you know, at the park with your children, that those moments are always there if we're willing to listen to them. So thank you. That was really helpful. And Alana and I talk a lot about how do we support our heart dreams and the heart dreams of others. And I love having those prompts to help you. How do I bring that into my day to day world, my day to day decisions?
Yeah, and sometimes it just means deliberately stopping, as you said, creating stillness. We live in a world that demands our attention. There's always a noise. There's always something to watch, turn on, you know, and really spiritual life asks us not to leave that world, because most of us can't just walk out of our lives,
mm-hmm.
but to create mm-hmm. those moments of stillness within our lives. And then to, I would just call it deeper listening to the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do this with my kids. I used to, we'd be somewhere and I'd just say, let's stop it. What can, tell me what you hear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hear a train way in the distance. I hear a bird. What kind of bird? I don't know what kind of, but I can make that sound. And just the repetition of nature, or the paying attention, makes us tune in a little more to the grounding that is part of our lives. It's here. It's for each of us. It just, we confuse it with all kinds of things. You know, all day today, you know, we've all, each four of us have confused our lives with a million things, you know. But did we stop? And I can't even tell you that I stopped that well today. So it takes mm-hmm. discipline too, you know. It takes intention.
Mm-hmm. Can we get Elena back in here again?
Yes, hello. Yes. So turning to the introduction that you've written, I love this first quote. It really hit me as a recovering Mormon, because, you know, I don't know how much people know about the LDS faith, but, you know, they don't really believe in hell. They believe in something called outer darkness. And there's always a testimony that the church is true or the gospel is true. And so this introductory quote that you have by, I hope I pronounce it anywhere near right, is it Dag or Dog? Dag Hammarskjöld? And it says, the road to self-knowledge does not pass through faith, but only through the insight we gain by pursuing the fleeting light. In the depth of our being, do we reach the point where we can grasp what faith is? How many have been driven into outer darkness by empty talk about faith as something to be rationally comprehended, something, quote, true? I love that quote. It hit me so hard when I first read that, you know, when we first got the book 2 years ago. You know, I just, it just got me right where I needed to be. You know, I just want to know how did you come to that quote? What is it that drew you into that quote, or just expound a bit on that for us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's so common in religious life and in the world of faith traditions that everybody makes a claim on what is true. And in my faith tradition, Unitarian Universalism, you know, we say, you know, nobody has a monopoly on the truth, but we all have a little piece of it. And I think when we live in these worlds, especially in religious life, where only one way can be true, we block out the real truth of the world that is all around us. And we create a lens that is so thick that we can't see other ways to deeper kind of relationships with the world, with each other, with God. And it limits us, is my point. So Hammarskjöld's really speaking to that. He's saying, you know, if you limit yourself to this one narrow path, you go as if into the darkness. There's nothing, I always say, there's nothing in nature that is only one way. You know, I mean, like, go
mm-hmm.
outside tomorrow and look around your, you know, look around the natural world. There's variety. There's only human beings have created this notion that there's only one way. And when we create these dogmatic positions of one way, what we always create is heresy on the other side of that, which is that someone is wrong and dangerous and evil. And so we're seeing that in the world very clearly lately. And I just don't think that that's a healthy perspective to take, especially with one something so precious as your spiritual life. My job in the world, I find one of my callings is to always call into question even what I believe is true, and so thus the dialogue in faith becoming that balancing point between faith and doubt, which I think is actually very healthy. And I think to that what I say in early in the book is to walk that middle path. It's to believe in things that are true enough, but to maintain an internal maybe, maybe not, as we pass through life experiences, open to the possibility that we are wrong. That perspective can actually allow us to be inquisitive about the world and to find different sources of strength and courage and joy, really. And when we talk, you know, earlier we were talking about joy. Like, it can't. So what happens, I think, and what I hear you saying in your faith journey is that there was this limiting factor, and there is no joy in that. There is no peace. You know, there's no peace in that. There's no freedom in that. And that's not what the spirit of any faith tradition really was designed to do. Every faith tradition you can name was designed originally to free us, to put us in a deeper position of relating to something holy, which is not man's creation of the rules. And so this is where this book, I think, should help people, even if they are deep in a faith tradition, just to ask it good questions, you know, and that's one of my goals here.
Yeah, I think that's
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's an amazing goal. And I love that the idea when Ruben was talking about the different lenses, because, you know, just you're saying as a window pane, I was thinking about the lenses as they would line up, especially once you seek to kind of have a different kind of understanding within yourself about that perspective and being able to line them up within yourself and have your vision be just in a different way, just like you would put on a camera, you put multiple lenses or something like that to be able to have detail or wider vision or whatever. I just really love that idea that you can play with that as a metaphor and see what that would be once you do a little exploration, being curious about things.
Yeah. And, you know, things change. You change. Things change. The world changes. And
that's helpful.
You know, yeah. We should be learning ways in which we can change. So somebody said to me, well, you know, I'm going to read this book. I'll do these exercises, but, you know, I'm not going to use it again. I said, well, actually, what you should do is you should do it today, and 10 years from now, you should do it again and then see, see what's different. You know, because you are changing. You are a changing human being. If you're not changing, something's really wrong, right? I mean, like, we're
especially
all
as the world's changing around you.
Yeah, and our physical beings are changing. Our spirits are changing. Even, you know, year to year, maybe every beginning of the year, we should do some of these exercises out of this book and just say, okay, what is the thing that I'm deeply loyal to right now? You know. How has my worldview changed in this last year? What are the things I'm learning in the world that are asking me to see it in a different way? You know, the pandemic has done that to us a lot. It's asked us to really reexamine what's important to us. So all of a sudden going to work isn't really that important for a lot of people. The actual physical going is less important. The work is important, but actually our families have become more important, you know, things like that. So, you know, if we're tuned to the world, we should be allowing it to change us, and we shouldn't be fighting against it, because that's where fear really comes in. And religion that's based on fear, for me, is its own kind of hell and its own kind of destructive force. So that's where some of this is coming from, too.
Well, I was going to ask if you
were
writing another book. Yeah, I was going to ask if you're writing another book, but I guess you don't need to. So there you go.
I'm actually working on
a
book.
Pick that book up at the beginning and the end of the year. There you go.
that's great. That'd be good. I am involved in another writing project with two other people. We're writing on grief and the process of grief. And that's a whole nother show sometime, but it's, that grief, that we can't just get over grief, that the world likes us to just, but we have to work through it. And so we've created it's a totally different idea, but it's a similar kind of self-exploration, which is part of the spiritual pursuit.
Yeah.
and so important right now because we've lost so many things that we may not even think of as losses right yet.
Yeah, I mean, and continue to not only losing friends,
yeah.
people, family members, but also ways of life. You know, we think about we're almost a year into
yes.
This pandemic. You know, it's not nothing. You know, it's,
yeah, and
it's
how
been,
we work and right, and how we relate to each other, and how do I hug somebody, right? All things that we never really thought we'd be missing.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that I have people in my church who were lonely before this, and
mm-hmm.
their lonely is now at its own kind of pandemic, and it's.
Yes.
We've been trying lots of different ways and things like this podcast and, you know, all our meetings online and all kinds of things like that are helpful. But, yeah, the world changed around us. And it does make us ask ourselves, what are really important? What are the really important
mm-hmm.
things? And to me, that's spiritual life, you know, to be asking that kind of question, even in very difficult times. So.
Yeah. Well, one thing we love to do on the show is have some kind of a exercise or a meditation that we love to have for our listeners with our regular cafeers. So I'm wondering if I could get you to do some kind of just a real simple one. We've got about 4 minutes left and have it be
yeah,
something that
sure.
people could kind of have as a go-to for themselves before we join one another again next week.
Yeah, sure. I was thinking about this because you asked me about it in our communication. I was thinking about reflecting on our time in our country where truth is challenged, where we see despair and hope collide. And I was thinking about my predecessor at the church I serve, First Unitarian Church in Dallas, Marion Franklin Ham. He served the church in the early 1900s. He was a person who worked for dialogue and interfaith understanding in this time of turbulence in the first 10 years of the 1900s. There was a rise of white supremacy groups, religious intolerance, all kinds of things. And in 1933, he wrote this hymn that I love. It's called As Tranquil Streams That Meet and Merge. And so I thought I'd just read you some of these lines and let them flow over you. And I think you could substitute the word church with the word country in this regard. But here are the words. It's just a little meditation. And if you remember only one thing, it's just imagine in your life tranquil streams meeting and merging and flowing as one. He says, as tranquil streams that meet and merge and flow as one to seek the sea, our kindred hearts and minds unite to build a church that shall be free, or to build a country that shall be free. Free from the bonds that bind the mind to narrow thought and lifeless creed. Free from a social code that fails to serve the cause of human need. A freedom that reveres the past, but trust the dawning future more and bid the soul in search of truth adventure boldly and explore. Prophetic country, the future waits your liberating ministry. Go forward in the power of love. Proclaim the truth that makes us free. So I give you that. I think Marion Ham.
Thank you. I'm
going to
take that and put a bow on it. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
that's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
I could yeah,
yes.
absolutely feel that. Thank you so much.
Together.
Thank you, Daniel.
Be stronger together.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, next week we'll be starting to really be looking at just your introduction, and we'll be talking about belief. I think that's going to be really an interesting thing. Anything that you'd like to kind of have as a precursor for that?
Belief is sort of a bad word for some people, and it's the only word for other people. So, you know, I think, you know, just remember that, you know, like it, belief really means a sense, what you set your heart upon. And I encourage you all to think about that in the coming weeks. What are you setting your heart upon? It's a different thing than what you're putting your mind to. That's a different idea. and that's important. I think if we had a world that set our hearts on things like merging the flow of our hearts and minds in the service of something bigger, we would be living more peaceful times. So.
I look forward to that. I look forward to that. We're going to help set some hearts in that direction. And what we're going to do is take a section at a time over the next few weeks. Of course, you're always welcome, you know, to come join us at any time. Your words will be with us. We'll have them working the discussion guide and doing these beautiful questions that you have with each chapter. And we're honored to have you and the book with us. And we're grateful.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me. It's great.
Oh, yeah. You're welcome anytime.
Anytime.
We'll save a chair for you.
That's right. And some dessert, as promised.
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel said that before the show started. He says, dessert, right? And we're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, just remind everybody to go over to the Transformation Cafe community over on Facebook. And we'll start be doing different questions and things like that. And Daniel's been very generous about offering the workbook. We'll have a link to that if you go over to our Facebook page and be able to have that going as well. So we want to just thank you, Daniel.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care. And everybody have a great week.
Let's
we'll
start.
We're
going to be flowing.
Book club. Woo-hoo!
Flowing. Woo!
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.